Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the holy ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Hello everybody, this is Bluewater coming to you from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. And our guest...
Well, howdy folks, this is Isla Hatter. Thanking you for visiting me in these smoky mountains. Why don't you join me for a roadside ramble through wildcrafting.com?
Right now, I'm forgetting now, because I haven't gone back. Was it you or your wife that has the lineage out of Pocahontas?
Me.
You do, okay.
And guess what, Jerry does too.
Yeah, I saw the list of names there we saw the Coleman and several others on there, folks that we know. And of course, I'm sure there's, 100,000 descendants by this.
Probably a million by now.
I can imagine with only, one child and how that exponentially increases over
the years.
Yeah, well,
the entire royal house by now everybody in Europe is her descendant. Because the Randolphs married into royal house in England. And, So by now, they've all intermarried, and now they're all...
Well, all the heads of Europe are all related somewhere, anyway.
And they're all related to Pocahontas now.
Yeah.
And they married in a lower level, but somewhere in the mix, they all got mixed up, too. But the Colemans are on there. I've probably got several... Pocahontas line. I haven't been through here, but I'm a I'm a Wilson. The Wilsons are. I get my through the Wilsons, but I'm also
because I knew Wilson's wife, Edith Bowen, was a descendant.
Yeah. The family. Yeah, I just grew up hearing it. The family knew it. They're also related to Mary Queen of Scots, and the Greens. Gardner Green was on 1835 census, but the Greens are related to her, so I probably got several. I think just about anybody in the South nowadays.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting. We found out that the Cherokee had always known that her mother was Cherokee. We just never had come across anything about it until, I guess, maybe 5 years ago that we found out that the last wife of I happen to remember you say his real name. That last wife was Cherokee, and that's the one who gave birth to his favorite, which was apparently the last child of his, Charles Walker. And we didn't know that. We said something to a Cherokee, and he says, "Oh yeah, we always knew that."
Yeah, she had a sister. I can't remember what her name is.
She did. Yeah.
Oh, what kind of sister? And I can't remember her name right offhand, but she did have a sense of a sister.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but she was somewhere in the Gilcrease Museum. I'm told that if you go to the Gilcrease Museum in Tulsa and look around, that there's some kind of a display that talks about Anoka'i. There's two different spellings. And it means the spring or the well.
Okay. Yeah, because Ana is the word for water. And anything that water and salt, which are two basics of life, have almost the same word in, it actually spell the same in Cherokee, but they have just a slightly different pronunciation, and they'll tell us what it is, and we go, huh? That's the same word. No, I said it differently, and you go, yeah, sure you did.
Depending on the dialect, either Ama or Amo.
Mm-hmm. And it's just hard to, when you hear them say it, it's sounds like the same word, but anyway, I'm thinking about Cherokee language, which is one of the hardest.
And it's interesting because the family lived, apparently the village there in Virginia, it was near the Peak of the Otter, was the village of Amanut, and the word had something to do with it meant Bear Creek, what it meant. So it was, what we understood was that the marriage was things were different back then. John Red Hat told me, they fought a war with the Mound Builders and stopped the war by agreeing to intermarry. Go figure.
Okay.
You
the
know?
Europeans did it.
Huh?
Europeans did that too.
Yeah. And
I'll give you my daughters, you'll stop killing my people.
Yeah. And so that was the reason why, that's how they stopped the war. And which that wouldn't be anything anybody would think about doing to stop a war.
Mm-hmm.
It's really strange for a number there.
Well, it's a interesting thing about the I found out, I forget, I have a document on it somewhere that I read. I think it's the word Adirondack, which is a little bit south of that, but general area. Adirondack means bark eater. And those were Iroquoian people, in that area. And neighboring tribes observed them getting the sassafras root bark and the wild cherry bark and all these things that they made up for medicines, apparently, and call them the bark eaters, which has survived to this day. And I just tell folks from, how did I end up doing this? I said, well, I just come from a long line of bark eaters. why wouldn't that be passed down, just like musical abilities and mathematical abilities? And people say, oh, violin, you love violin. Well, did you know your great-grandpa was this fiddler and da-da-da-da-da? And I'm thinking, well, why not other things as well get passed on? Just affinity for the natural world.
Yeah. Well, my friend White Eagle, who's He's a grandson of the Eastern Shoshone Chief Washakie. And all his life, White Eagle just had to have a buffalo in the backyard.
Hmm.
And recently he found out that he had some Lakota blood through the greens. And I told him, I said, well, I hate to tell you this, I said, but I said, the Chickamauga Cherokee's married into the Lakotas, you know, the ones that didn't want to quit fighting. I said, this year probably Cherokee too. But, and then,
well,
and I said, and if you are, I said, you're a Pocahontas descendant too, because the greens are part of Cherokee.
There you go.
But,
where is that DNA? It surfaces.
Well, he found out that that the familial name of Lakota meant keeper to the buffalo.
Oh,
they were absolutely astounded.
Wow.
That he was so attracted to buffalo. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, we have a friend over here, Oliver, who is Cherokee, but he couldn't find anybody to teach him old ways because they said they're gone. You know, so all the people that knew really the old stuff was, you got to go to Oklahoma. And he went to Oklahoma, didn't find what he needed out there, and he ended up going out doing Sundance and learning the Lakota ways and coming back to Tennessee, and he does sweat lodges and puts people on the hill for vision quests and that kind of thing. He's done it for years and years and lived very close to the land. And he's been an old friend. He's getting to where it's getting to be difficult for him to do sweat lodges because Jerry had to quit due to blood pressure. But anyway, that was, you know, he used to found out that there just wasn't a whole lot that should be continued, that you could say were Cherokee old ways. There's just not a lot of folks around that, you know, just didn't get passed on, got separated, and except for the Gadua Society, that's about it. And that's basically out of Arkansas. And they came together. We have that tape of the mother town of the Cherokee when they finally bought the sacred mound back. And now it's in their possession again here. And they finally brought all three together, the Arkansas group, Oklahoma, and the ones here. And in that tape, the fellow from the Kadoo in Arkansas says that they had a prophecy that they would be brought together again at some point in the future. You know, kind of like here in Jerusalem, like they do say, and it finally happened.
Did you go to that meeting where in North Carolina where all three principal chiefs were there?
No, I think that's the one that they had after that. They had the dedication ceremony, and then later they had another event where they did have them all.
Uh-huh. Well, John Redhead, my teacher, was the elder that presided over that meeting.
Oh, okay.
Man, met him. He had a kind of long white beard.
Uh-huh.
Real thin.
Yeah, I think I've seen that size picture in the paper.
Yeah.
Had that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you could go to Kitua-Society.org. You see his picture sitting in a wheelchair next to Cat Smith. Actually, the Kitua band is not the Kitua Society. The Kitua band was formed by members that Christianized.
Mm-hmm.
And they were from the Kitua Society. Nowadays, you know, they're mixed in with traditionals and you know, but the whole Kitua Society movement in the 1850s was started by Cherokee Baptist preachers.
Mm-hmm. That was what surprised Jerry when he was there for that ceremony that they were going to bring the sacred fire back, and this fellow that was to, you know, come and preside over it, and he explained it all, and he was a Baptist preacher. You know, that surprised him because he said, I was ready to check it all and embrace what was my Indian heritage, and he said, come to find out it was all together. It was just a more better explanation of what it was all about, what it meant.
Well, what had happened was Redbird Smith back in the 1850s was elected the chief of the Kitua Society. The easiest way to explain it is if you separate church from state, the Kitua Society is the Cherokee's church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a lot of full-blood Kituas who are members of the Ketua Society who do not have cards and cannot get cards, because if your ancestors, to begin with, most of the Ketuas are Western Cherokees,
mm-hmm.
and they have a very close affinity with Chickamauga Cherokees, which is my people,
mm-hmm.
but they generally won't have anything to do with anybody from Tahlequah, and most of the Ketua Band people are actually from Tahlequah. They actually kind of have two headquarters,
mm-hmm,
but if for some reason your ancestors didn't walk the Trail of Tears and then didn't come sign the rolls, you're not a Cherokee citizen nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
that's out what the Oklahoma thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And over here, you have to be part of the family to be a part of the Eastern Band. You got to be a descendant of those families that stayed put and either had already renounced and become citizens, or they were the ones that hit out and came forth.
Now you're one of the few people that knows about the apocalypses of it. That yeah, you're right, because I believe it was 1813. Or 14, the Oconoluftis renounced Cherokee citizenship,
mm-hmm.
took U.S. citizenship in Miles Square reservations, and they were required to hunt down Jolly's people or lose what they had.
Exactly so. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of funny that, you know, you see the Trail of Tears Museum there in Cherokee, North Carolina, you know, but I understand that some of those people walk back.
Yes.
They are in the rolls.
A lot of those where they say so many people died on the trail, a lot of those are people that simply walk away,
mm-hmm.
were able to just leave.
Well, some walk through.
And melted into the woodwork.
Yeah, there's some that walk through back to Oklahoma.
They do.
And they were coming back as late as the 20s and 30s.
Ew.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, well, some of the famous families here, that's what happened is that it took them a year or two, but they walked back from Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was, I think we told you about that guy that came in to the Dolly Manor, to the nursing home, and at the lunchroom, and wanted to know about the Trail of Tears, and kept asking, said, did anybody want to tell me anything about it? And they said, you know, to Oklahoma, our people didn't go. We don't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in the wrong place, boy.
About right. And the really sad thing is that the truly traditional people left in 1721. Some of them went to Mexico, and they went to the base of Zaragoza, where they ended up, and that's where Sequoia found them.
Mm-hmm.
Just before, I think it was 1838, he went down and actually found them, and he was being hunted by the U.S. authorities, by the Mexican authorities, and by the Cherokees who were hunting him, because nobody wanted these people found. And, you know, after the Civil War, the Chickamauga Cherokees and others that had gone to Texas, he was joined up with the Kickapoos and a bunch of other people that were, you know, they were known as the Texas Cherokees.
Right.
They came up to South Washington to enroll, and they were forced back by armed U.S. troops.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized? Or even attacked, or worse, would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age, and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website, with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging, and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Will Blue Otter. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now. This AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason. But I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them, and that to me is the most important thing in a man's. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, and I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist. When I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met, and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, they never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think, and they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, they have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot to that we can do to change human behavior. We keep making laws to try and change human behavior. You can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that position. You're being conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and they're not gonna whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that. But the wise person will help. But of course now they've got so damn many charities and there's so much professionalism, you know, there's if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity. By the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So, I mean, Christ,
I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ's sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimistic. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
And, you know, it's now known, and I understand it's even been admitted by Talaquas, there was collusion between the U.S. government and them to keep as many people as they could off of the rolls.
Mm. And then those at Houston had gotten out of there and took them to Texas when he was out of the state up in, or the country at the time, it was a republic, when he was up in Washington, Mirabeau de Lamar, who used to be, in my mind, and one of the Texas heroes, but no longer, he came around and wiped them all out.
Yeah.
And the Indian to him was a dead Indian, good Indian was a dead Indian, and they thought that he was building a power base, and so they just came along, and these peaceful citizens, and had been through so much already, and they just probably massacred them.
Well, they had $2.5 million
acres of land grant. Yeah, I mean, that. It was great again.
Yeah, Mirabeau Lamar was governor of Georgia during that, is he the governor of Georgia or was from Georgia at that time? But he was the second governor of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And an Indian hater.
Right.
And Houston had been adopted by John Jolly.
Yeah.
And married his daughter.
Right.
So they got, you know, they're really... The ones that went to Mexico and stayed, even though some of them were caught and forced back across the border with not even the clothes on their back, totally naked. But the ones that ended up in Mexico were really and got to stay were the only ones that really escaped. They also kept their culture.
That's just the part we're trying to find, wasn't it, with that bunch down there?
Mm-hmm.
I think he actually died probably in Texas territory, didn't he?
Well...
It was Mexico at the time, but actually,
this is Cherokee's headed for the base of the Rocky Mountains, which is just below the Big Bend area of Texas, in Zaragoza, and that is where Dr. Charles Gattoli or Kingfisher Rogers went looking. Actually, they were his family was the first family that went to Texas in traditional garb, even though hundreds of people had been down there. They were the first that went down traditional garb, and the people at the hacienda saw those Cherokees and said, well, they recognized them as Cherokees, so they said, oh, well, you're the first bunch of people to show up here that look like Cherokees, so guess what, we're going to take you to the cave where and show you his tomb. So these folks showed them to the tomb, and they had a prophecy that... Sequoia apparently had told them, you know, who to expect and how to expect them, and the folks can read about that at CherokeeNationMexico.com. So it's a fascinating story. And,
did you ever come across the story by Traveler Bird?
Yeah.
Called
them Goliath.
Yeah. That was, I found mention of it in a storybook that he wrote, which was a children's story from his grandfather. And at the end of that book, he talks about this other, just briefly, this other story about this is why Sequoia was out there looking for the remnants of what had started the tribe society in Cherokee. and was an innocent here, and I was looking for the rest of the other book, and he disappeared from all local libraries. The copy doesn't exist anywhere, no day. And we're in Snowbird Mountains. We're here where his grandpa lives, and nobody will say anything about Traveling Bird's grandpa or acknowledge who this guy is or was at all. I did find one person who did know him, who met Traveling Bird and knew what he was fixing to write, and he was writing, and Sequoia was his hero, and he didn't want anything to the series, the idea that Sequoia came up with this totally on his own, but he was writing a book about Sequoia, so he wouldn't give Traveler the time of day. And apparently the people themselves, I guess, eventually wherever the book turned up, it politely disappeared. So I've since talked to a fellow who teaches Cherokee studies. He's a white man, but he teaches over at the Western Carolina University. And he sent me a long piece of part of his book that he's writing, which has a lot of refuting statements about the theory couldn't be true because of A, B, and C. I don't know in this moment, but just curious if you had come across that and what you thought about it.
Well, he was definitely tried for witchcraft. And, and I guess what Traveler Bird had said was that they cut off his ears, and that the picture that everybody sees of him is not, at least know the name of the person was the model. And,
yeah, it was somebody else.
But,
it rings of something like the Mormon story about place, you know, and finding writing and
well,
the knowledge of that. And
we did. It's too bad your friend that came back to Oklahoma looking for the old Cherokee ways. See, back in the 60s, there was a fellow here in Missouri, Richard Craker. He went to the Will Rogers Indian Club, and back then all the Cherokee people were more interested in Cheyenne ways than they were in their own ways. And there was one old Ottawa, he's still alive. And so that Ottawa, he agreed to teach Grandfather Richard, and Grandfather Richard is the last Ottawa now, and he lives pretty close to Springfield, Missouri, and he's the spiritual leader for the White River and Sac River bands, the Chickamauga Cherokees. He's Cherokee and Quapaw in German, and but he's kind of the grandfather. And there still are stop dance grounds in Oklahoma. What happened was at some point in his life, Fred Bird Smith decided that he was going to revere Jesus, not worship him, but they actually adopted Jesus into the Ketuba Society. See, the Ketuba religion is basically Christianity without a redeemer. And then at that point, one of his sons, I believe it was Stokes, took half of the fire and all the wampum belts and left, got angry with their father, and they went and started another stomp dance ground, and I understand that ground was called, of all things, the Redbird Smith ground. And that kind of explains why, if you go to ketuba-society.com, ketuba-society.org, you can watch a video. It's a 1-hour video that was shot back in 1984. Bill Jones of 7JRH TV Bill got permission to shoot that documentary, And if you'll notice in there that Chief William Smith had to have the Waffen belts delivered. Well, that's because they don't reside at the Stokes Smith ground anymore. They were taken away by Stokes Smith to the new ground. So you got family infighting, which was all prophesied. And over this and that and the other, and you know, you get two Cherokees together. You know, the old saying around Missouri is you get two Cherokees together, and you know, after an hour, you're going to have five tribes. New tribes, you know, which is really kind of sad. But that's kind of like there still are the Kituwa society. The stomp grounds are still up on, and there's Chickamauga Cherokee stomp grounds in various places in Missouri, and there's secret stomp grounds all over the South and Southeast. You know, wherever there was Cherokee people, that didn't
know exactly what happened when this one was brought it up in Cherokee. A lot of the preachers in the churches said that they think, what a bad term is for excommunication, that they would lose their membership in the church if they were known to be a part of that. So they were telling them, you can't be Christian and Indian both. You got to do one or the other. And that was a sad thing, which is why it made it very difficult for the continents to ever really have a whole lot of the native people as part of it. It ended up attracting a lot of people from outside.
Mm-hmm.
Or those who want to be
descendants,
who came to be a part of it.
Will, have
you mentioned
Gosky
Smith?
Stokes
Smith?
No, it's
Gosky Roslin
and...
Yeah, his sons, yeah.
Anyway, they came here and brought a Kituwa here. And brought it from North of Calhoun and got it out in Big Cove.
Mm-hmm, that's what I understand.
I didn't know if that was the same branch or didn't say it hasn't done well here at all. They, it's real interesting, it's a guy named Russ Townsend that they hired from Telequar, his PhD in cultural preservation, that they said is what he does. Is now this tribe's got tons of money, and I mean like $160 million a year. They're going around and excavating everywhere. They're doing a lot of good, and they're also building a lot, but anyway, whenever they do a ceremony for the entire tribe here, they bring a group in from Oklahoma to do the stomp instead of using Walker and the immigrant here. So, interesting stuff.
Yeah, something. Well, you've got basically nowadays. I understand there's either three or four stomp grounds, plus the four mother stomp grounds. There used to be, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50 stomp grounds back when Redbird Smith was alive. And if you go to the Kituwa Society, Kituwa-Society.org, and click on the word factions at the top of the page, there's a full explanation of what happened and who split with whom. And the sad thing is that the Kituwa Society was told that Chief William Smith in that video admitted that the Kituwa Society is the chief medicine society or chief tribe of all the tribes in North America, and if any message were to come through for all the tribes, it would come through the Kituwa Society, and they were also told back in the 1850s and 60s. That they were supposed to bring all of the nations together and back to Great Spirit, but you know, starting in 1866, the Kituwa Society basically haven't gotten off the dime since the end of the Civil War. So John Red Hat Duke took it upon himself. He was a member of the Long Hair Clan, which was the spiritual core of the Kituwa Society. He took it upon himself to get the society off the dime. And he died. And one of the things he did was He was the founder of the idea of Prophecy Keepers Radio, which we started that up about a month after he passed away. And he was the elder behind Prophecy Keepers and Wovoka.com also. And he was the guy that put the bug in Chad Smith's ear. That ended up with Chad Smith putting out the press release that it's time for Cherokees to quit calling other Cherokees that don't have cars and wannabes. Because you have people like the head of the Cherokee Elder Society, Paul Thomas. And Paul will tell you if he was born 50 miles north of where he was, he wouldn't have a card either. And he fully accepts that 90% of the people that say that they're Cherokee are Cherokee. And, what's the big deal anyway? Sorry, the big deal is made over citizenship. And then basically, once the people lost the culture, which happened about 1880, then here recently, beginning basically in the 70s, the Kituba Band had their federal recognition in 1949, and then the Cherokee Nation got their recognition, but only as a Class 3. The Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma is recognized as a Class 3 Indian organization rather than a Class 1 tribe. But they've exerted authority over more people, and the more people you have, and more money you have flowing. So basically, they kind of, and I understand particularly in the Mankiller administration, they kind of strong-armed and want to dictate what everybody should think as to what the culture consisted of. And at one point, there was a joint resolution, I guess it was made about 1995, a joint resolution made by the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma and the Eastern Band, naming all of the unrecognized Cherokee groups that had signed a Cherokee Unity Statement in 1994, and excoriating the states of Alabama and Georgia for recognizing state recognized tribes, which are really kind of ridiculous because the first, and some people nowadays don't like the idea of state recognized tribes, but hey, there's state recognized tribes that predate the United States of America in Maine, in Virginia, possibly elsewhere.
There's five in Alabama, that's where I'm from.
That's the one in the tribes I belong to. And they're all a mess.
Well, it's just in the newspaper about this.
Let me throw some things at you. We are so dictated here by the administration of the tribes, and it's really interesting. But anyway, that's not the end of this. When we first came up here, we met a fellow named Bill Jackson, who was one of the first guys up here to have a master's degree, but he came from a very traditional family here in Snowbird. And Gil was the one who told us, he said, you're not going to find anybody that knows it all. You're going to find a little here and a little there, that kind of thing. And unfortunately, in the 15, 16 years we've been here, we have seen so many of the old people die and go away. So even more are gone.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now. Marie
Osmond.
Put
it under your bed. Put it in your closet. Give it for Christmas to people and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No. Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
From what we were told by a fellow who's also passed away, it's all the rules. He said there are about 12,000 people here, Cherokee, that are known as part of the Cherokee, and about maybe 700 of them are full blood. But what's happening now is they're really bearing down on the 116th blood quotient, and even some of them are required to do DNA. And an awful lot of families now that have been here for 160 years that have. The blood quotient is going away as they may have more and more into other societies, other ethnic groups, including white. They're basically an athlete, going to boil it down.
Mm-hmm.
When I first came up here, the chief was Jonathan Taylor. He was half Cherokee and half black. And it was a known fact that he would take anybody who offered it to me, even $5 to put you on the roads, because he said, here's more people we got, more money. Now that sounds derogatory, but Jonathan did do a couple of things for people. He couldn't read or write, but anyhow, what they're doing now is they're going through to get rid of the DNA for the white Indians. And some ought to go, I'll be honest with you, Dad. And they found the ruler they used to have that if anybody married an Indian woman, that guy got a free house and all the benefits went with it. Well, that's no longer the case. So a lot of changes are going on here. They're trying to clean it up, if you will. Just like Mandy said one day, we're going to know. She said, you're going to all these people showing up with chokers on and ponytails and want the vitamin and elders running from us. Well, Mandy, I said, the Indian people still represent village and community and togetherness. They got to keep the harmony that because she's very much still fairly strong. But anyway, it's that kind of dynamic that goes on here, and it's a real resurgence that there's so many people with the advent of the museum being built in Washington, a renaissance of Indian thought, if you will, where there are many, like I mentioned the other day, we know that there's at least 29 million descendants of Indians in this country. And many of them now are beginning to embrace that. They don't necessarily want to learn all the ways, but they're proud of it. Whereas it's an embarrassing thing that they're a person of color, you know what they do from the South like I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing that in these mountains, we have 800 medicinal herbs here, and many of them have yet to even be
perfected. Mm-hmm.
So I'm real interested now to learn more about Indian medicine, but mainly I'll tell you that there's very, very few people who even know medicine.
Did you know?
It's an interesting thing. I was with Walter when they brought on Goski and Hickory and Crosby and brought the Star Dance back to here. And it was an unfortunate thing because when the first time when we got ready to do the Star, nobody knew what to do except for the people. They were wonderful. I mean, they were happy and cheerful. And there was a lot of apathy here by the Eastern Band of Cherokee. And it was quite a thing to see these people being exposed, so many of them for the first time, to the stones. And yet, on the other hand, maybe he's 83, and many of them, you know, they're in their 80s and 90s. They still do, or used to do, and later remember the old songs and the old dances.
Uh-huh.
You know, they really never went away, because you get lost in these mountains. A lot of them did that. And it, just by living here, we have learned so much. It's like where we live here. If you walked out about 200 yards, there's a big open ground there. That's where they just pushed off. It's safe to come out after the movement. And this is actually where the Union started. Was right here at the store. And then when Will Thomas walked the land over there on the face of the mountain, that's where they all went to the end. So just, we have heard so many stories, so many different ideas and opinions. And we just sort of have made our minds up a long time ago to spend most of our time with the people like them in Chick-fil-A and Ira Rattler. With the sweetheart we missed, we know all the kids, and one of her kids is Ella Bird, and her dad was Stallman Bird from her grandfather. And but came from Maggie Wachowski. And Maggie Wachowski was 116 when she died about 7 years ago. And she spoke both English and Cherokee. She did medicine on both life centers. But see, that's something that happened here in Snowbird, which is 50 miles away from the Cherokee Reservation.
Mm-hmm.
It's still considered reservation land, but there's a 50-mile no-man's land between the two of them. And that gal would walk every day to Cherokee to take the minutes of the council, because she was a councilman, and put it both English and Cherokee. So it's... Well, we got to the point where we just started spending more time with them and listening to them and supporting them and that kind of thing. And it's been good, but they'll all tell you so much has been lost. So much has been lost over the years.
Sure has.
Even in trying to study what people do still remember for the, you know, medicine or plants that they, you know, wild plants that they eat. And it's true. I find a little bit of it in one family and another in another, and it might be the same, it might be different, and it's really hard. There would be no way that I could write a book that says, here's the list of Cherokee medicine plants, because it's different depending on each family.
And that's borne out in the thing that you just did. Somebody brought us a book, a thesis that had been lost for gosh, 50 years. That was done by Dr. William Banks from the University of Tennessee. He said he was a student of Dr. Sharp. At any rate, Eileen brought this thing to us, and we took it to the tribe. They didn't want it, and we took it to the National Park, and they published it. And on the plans of the Cherokee, 14 elders that he came and studied with when he did his thesis on the ethnobotany of the Cherokee. And it's probably the most up-to-date.
It was the first one done since Mooney had gone and went and talked to the folks, and these people were all gone now, and a lot of it wasn't passed to their children, so it's an important document. And he said the same thing as his, and I've since met Dr. Banks, and he said, I'll bet you found the same thing I did, was that every family knew the same plants, but they might have different uses for them. I said, exactly so. So he did the best he could and documented what was known at the time, and wrote the different ways that people use the different things. Some people would know a certain plant that I know of as a shoeport, which is like a mountain horseradish, and some would know to use it for medicine, and some would only know it as a food plant.
What's
it called?
A monk rosewood?
Shoeport.
And another interesting dichotomy here, if you want to look at it that way, Cherokee Reservation as such is Cherokee that we think of, and only 6,000 live on it. The other 5 live off the reservation where they work and they call their own homes. But they still have land on the res. And then over here 50 miles due west of Cherokee is Snowbird,
TPL.
And then you've got 50 miles south of us here is Murphy or Tavanta, and that's the other part of the reservation. So we did the statement, a lot of people don't realize that. But Lois told us way before she died, she said, you're most of the safest sites are from here down into Georgia. Not necessarily over there in Cherokee.
Well, so that explains why my wife, the first time we visited North Carolina, we were together. You know, we were down around staying with a family near, well, at Black Mountain or Swannanoa. And then we went over the reservation. And, I mean, that was all nice and pretty. And then I can't really tell you where exactly, but once we started getting into western North Carolina, that's when she started having this overwhelming feeling that she was home.
That's where we are. It is, and I agree with you, Gordy. It's just, this place over here is awesome. And to give you an idea, they talk over here about the Juneteenth Steve, the little people, the community, the spirit world, and all the mystical stories, the spirit thing and all of it. Well, man, we got so much stuff, and we can gather it up. And we're like you, we're broken preacher now, so we got so much stuff we can send to you. There's a fellow named Fred Bradley, dear, dear friend, has been from...
Fred? Okay, I was just getting ready to ask you if you knew him. I was getting ready to ask you if you knew him.
Oh, God, I've known him for years.
He's done 7 tapes, cassette tapes.
Do you have them?
Well, the reason why I asked is because he's... Robert Gosol's contact back there. And,
He was here not long ago.
I don't know. Robert? So he's on.
Fred was over here.
Yeah, Robert knows him. And, there. Have y'all ever heard of an old book called The Cherokee Book of Cures?
I don't remember.
Cherokee Book of Cures. I don't think so, huh?
Well,
I don't believe I've
Next time you see Fred, might ask him about it.
Sorry. His grandmother's mentioned it.
Because it does exist. It does exist. And that's probably all I should say about now.
Okay.
But we get off the interview, I'll tell you some more because I don't have...
Yeah.
I can't talk about it.
We'll take it up with Fred, yeah. Fred came to the... welfare buildings when I did a lecture and was announcing the printing of this book and introducing him to the folks that he, it was his grandmother that's one of the people I interviewed in that book for.
I'll tell you what, we'll send you a copy of the book, okay?
Oh, that'd be wonderful. And the other thing I'm going to do...
Now, I don't think Fred would mind sending you a little blue one. I'll make you a copy of these 7 cassettes of all the storytelling.
Okay.
The reason that Fred is significant is that he studied his grandfather's Choctaw grandfather, Choctaw Cherokee, in Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
They shipped him back and forth from there to his grandfather here, his grandfather here, Henry Bradley, with the chief of the tribe in 1950. And it was his Mrs. Henry Bradley that contributed a lot to this Cherokee branch book that he just published.
Wow.
So, I mean, you see how all this works?
Yep.
I mean, we could not, and we have not ever planned any of this. It just keeps happening. When we ended up in Snowbird, we lived on the res for the first year that we were here in Graham County. And Gil Jackson is a guy that told us that if you go out there and rent from my brother, he just got alcohol and he had again, he might get help. And boy, did we learn a bunch. We studied Cherokee. We lived with these little small group of traditional people. And still do for the last 12 years.
Wow.
And then when you live with them, you soak it up. You hear the real story. And there are places up above where we live, and Carolinburg was the one telling us about it. If you go up there at a certain time in the evening, you can hear them. You can hear them still singing and dancing up there. I mean, there's magic in these mountains. It's just absolutely different. Your wife welled up with that spirit when she came through here. I can totally understand because these spirits are alive and well here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Cherokee legends. We have all those books with those stories in them. Some of those legends take place here in this area. And there's still stories of people that we know today that they'll talk about the islands used to eat the little people. And they, because we're in such a wilderness area, it's just because the
places
where they believe they exist.
I'm not giving away anybody's medicine, but it's like we were told if you're having a hard time making a decision, you get up in the morning and you take dew off of a plant, you put it over your eyelids and it'll help you to see clear to make right decisions. Or if you've had a nightmare, your children have had a nightmare, you get them up, take them to a flowing stream, take water, put four times on your head, four times on your heart, stomach, your mouth, and let it go. And it will remove that conjure, remove that bad spirit. This is the kind of thing that we just, I mean, once they know you, we were here, gosh, I guess 3-4 years, just doing our thing and going along. And I was just continuing to teach and all this kind of thing. All of a sudden, one day, they started teaching. They started sharing these muscles with us. And you know well as we do, we have to be very judicious about what we share and who we share with, because we don't want to take away their muscles. But we feel so privileged to have been a part of this, you know. And, I mean, gosh, when you live it all, somebody asked us one time, said, why don't you tell me more about it? So we've got to ask the right questions.
Yeah, right.
That's what Mandy told us. She said, you ask the right questions, I give you the right answer.
Right. And it takes years to even figure out what the questions are.
Yeah.
Because that's the way they teach. Well, Rolling Thunder, I was going to ask you if you knew Charlie Two Trees. Rolling Thunder was our first traditional teacher. He was born and raised in the Kaimichi Mountains.
Do you have a friend named Oliver?
I thought he was about Oliver.
Oh, what's Oliver's last name?
I'm sorry.
Oliver, I'm sitting there thinking, man, that sounds familiar. Who would that be?
Oliver Loveday.
There's Oliver. When you said Oliver, I went, who was that? But anyway, Rolling Thunder grew up in those mountains in the 30s. And when you get a chance, you can listen to Mala's Spotted Eagles interview about the... He basically, their people had to hide out. And but he was brought up in the old medicine ways. He was a Chickamauga Cherokee, Pink clan, which is, you know, one of the medicine clans. But, and somewhere along the way, well, you know, he was at either Edgar Casey, he was at Casey's bedside when he died in 45. And, he, at some juncture, went back to North Carolina and was accepted by, and met some of the people from the Scribe Society and, you know, was taught some things. And he used to talk about, having to learn the plants. And one of the famous stories was, he says the final exam, he says he would take it out to a certain ridge and give it a choice between two plants. He says they looked so much alike. They both had the same color berry, and the leaves were almost indistinguishable from one. He says one was medicinal and the other would kill you. He says, and your final exam was to be able to, you better know which one was which. And he was when he was in his 60s, studied by the Menninger Foundation, because he was curing people of, you know, AIDS and cancer and you know what.
Right.
But, you know, one of the unfortunate things about Cherokees that don't have spiritual ways is that they wanted to try to start to dictate, you know, what spiritual ways were. And Rolling Thunder and some other people, you know, were you know, blasted by officers in the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma. So you've got just a huge mess. You have people that are calling Rolling Thunder a fraud and people that are calling me a fraud. And anybody that's associated with the prophecies, whether it's Sun Bear or Ghost Wolf, but it's just really sad.
It is.
It's just really sad. And, you know, it's now known, and I understand it's even been admitted by Talik Law, that there was collusion between the U.S. government and them to keep as many people as they could off of the rolls.
Mm. And then those at Houston had gotten out of there and took them to Texas when he was out of the state up in, or the country at the time, it was a republic, when he was up in Washington, Mirabeau de Lamar, who used to be, in my mind, and one of the Texas heroes, but no longer, he came around and wiped them all out.
Yeah.
And the Indian to him was a dead Indian, good Indian was a dead Indian, and they thought that he was building a power base, and so they just came along, and these peaceful citizens, and been through so much already, and they just probably massacred them.
Well, they had $2.5 million acre land grant.
Yeah, I mean, that, it was, it was great again.
Yeah, Mirabal Lamar was governor of Georgia during that, he's a governor of Georgia, or was from Georgia at that time, but he was the second governor of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And an Indian hater.
And, yeah, right.
And Houston had been adopted by John Jolly.
Yeah.
And married his daughter.
Right.
So they got, you know, they got, they're really, the ones that went to Mexico and stayed, even though some of them were caught and forced back across the border, was not even the clothes on their back, totally naked. But the ones that ended up in Mexico were really the, and got to stay were the only ones that really escaped. They also kept their culture.
And that's just the part we're trying to find, wasn't it, with that bus down there? Mm-hmm. I think he actually died probably in Texas territory, didn't he?
Well, the...
It was Mexico at the time, but...
Actually, the, this is Cherokee's headed for the base of the Rocky Mountains, which is just below the Big Bend area of Texas, Zaragoza, and that is where Dr. Charles Gattoli, or King Fisher Rogers, went looking. Actually, they were, his family was the first family that went to Texas in traditional garb, even though hundreds of people had been down there. They were the first that went down traditional garb, and the people at the hacienda saw those Cherokees and said, well, they recognized them as Cherokees. So they said, oh, well, you're the first bunch of people to show up here that look like Cherokees, so guess what? We're going to take you to the cave where to show you his tomb. So these folks showed them to the tomb, and they had had a prophecy that, well, Sequoia apparently had told them, you know, who to expect and how to expect them. And the folks can read about that at CherokeeNationMexico.com. So it's a fascinating story. And,
did you ever come across the story by Traveler Bird?
Yeah.
That said it
called him Eli.
Yeah. That was, I found mention of it in a storybook that he wrote, which was a children's story from his grandfather. And at the end of that book, he talks about this other, just briefly, this other story about this is why Sequoia was out there looking for the remnants of the, what had started the tribe society in Cherokee, and it was an interesting hearing. I was looking for the rest of the other book, and he disappeared from all local libraries. The copy doesn't exist anywhere. Nobody, and we're in Snowbird Mountains. We're here where his grandpa lives, and nobody will say anything about Traveler Bird's grandpa or acknowledge who this guy is or was at all. I did find one person who did know him, who met Traveler Bird and knew what he was fixing to write, and he was writing, and Sequoia was his hero, and he didn't want anything to carry the idea that Sequoia came up with this totally on his own, but he was writing a book about Sequoia, so he wouldn't give Traveler the time of day. And apparently the people themselves, I guess, eventually, wherever the book turned up, it politely disappeared. So I've since talked to a fellow who teaches Cherokee studies. He's a white man, but he teaches over at the Western Carolina University. And he sent me a long piece of part of his book that he's writing, which has a lot of refuting statements about the theory couldn't be true because of A, B, and C. I don't remember at the moment, but just curious if you had come across that and what you thought about it.
Well, he was definitely tried for witchcraft. And and I guess what Traveler Bird had said was that they cut off his ears, and that the picture that everybody sees of him is not, at least know the name of the person that was the model. And,
yeah, it was somebody else.
But
you know, it rings of something like the Mormon story about Slate. you know, and finding writing and
well,
the knowledge of that. And
we did have, we did. It's too bad your friend that came back to Oklahoma looking for the old Cherokee ways. See, back in the 60s, there was a fellow here in Missouri, Richard Craker. He was he went to the Will Rogers Indian Club, and back then all Cherokee people were more interested in Cheyenne ways than they were in their own ways. And there was one old Ottawa-y still alive. And so that Ottawa-y agreed to teach Grandfather Richard. And Grandfather Richard is the last Ottawa-y now. And he lives pretty close to Springfield, Missouri, and he's the spiritual leader for the White River and Sac River bands, the Chickamauga Cherokees. He's Cherokee and Quapaw in German, and but he's kind of the grandfather. And there still are stop dance grounds in Oklahoma. What happened was, at some point in his life, Fredbird Smith decided that he was going to revere Jesus, not worship him, but they actually adopted Jesus into the Ketuba society. See, the Ketuba religion is basically Christianity without a redeemer. And then at that point, one of his sons, I believe it was Stokes, took half of the fire and all the wampum belts and left, got angry with their father, and they went and started another stomp dance ground, and understand that ground was called, of all things, the Redbird Smith Ground. And that kind of explains why, if you go to ketuba-society.com, ketuba-society.org, you can watch a video. It's a 1-hour video that was shot back in 1984. Bill Jones of WJRH TV
KJRH,
Bill got permission to shoot that documentary, and you'll notice in there that Chief William Smith had to have the wampum belts delivered. Well, that's because they don't reside at the Stokes Smith ground anymore. They were taken away by Stokes Smith to the new ground. So you got family infighting, which was all prophesied, and over this and that and the other. And you know, you get two Cherokees together. You know, the old saying around Missouri is you get two Cherokees together and, you know, after an hour, you're going to have five tribes. You try, you know, which is really kind of sad. But that's kind of like, that's kind of what there still are Ketuba society, you know, the stomp grounds are still in Oklahoma. And there's a, you know, there are Chickamauga Cherokee stomp grounds in various places in Missouri. And there's secret stomp grounds all over the South and Southeast, you know, wherever there were Cherokee people, that didn't want to build
Cherokee. When this one was started up in Cherokee, a lot of the preachers in the churches said that they'd be, what a bad term is, excommunication, that they would lose their membership in the church if they were known to be a part of that. So they were telling them, you can't be, Christian and Indian both. You got to do one or the other. And that was a sad thing, which is why it made it very difficult for the stomp dance to ever really have a whole lot of the Native people as part of it. It ended up attracting a lot of people from outside,
mm-hmm.
descendants or those who want to be descendants.
he came to be a part of it.
Will, have you, you mentioned Gokski Smith?
Stokes Smith?
No, it's Gokski, Gokski Crosland, and,
Yeah, his son, yeah.
Anyway, they came here and brought a Cthulhu here. And brought it from Walker Calhoun, who's got it out in Big Cove.
Mm-hmm. That's what I understand.
And so I didn't know if that was the same bunch or... Didn't say it hasn't done well here at all. They, it's real interesting. It's a guy named Russ Townsend that they hired from Telequar, PhD in cultural preservation, that basically what he does is... Now this tribe's got tons of money, and I mean like $160 million a year. They're going around and excavating everywhere. They're doing a lot of good, and they're also milling a lot, but anyway, whenever they do a ceremony for the entire tribe here, they bring a group in from Oklahoma to do the stomp instead of using Walker and the other group here. So, interesting. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, something. Well, you've got, basically, nowadays, I understand there's either three or four stomp grounds, plus the four mother stomp grounds. There used to be, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50 stomp grounds back when Redbird Smith was alive. And there's a, if you go to Cthulhu Society, Cthulhu-Society.org, and click on the word factions at the top of the page, is a full explanation of what happened and who split with whom. And the sad thing was is that the Cthulhu Society was told that the, well, and Chief William Smith in that video admitted that that the Cthulhu Society is the chief medicine society or chief tribe of all the tribes in North America. And if any message were to come through, for all the tribes that would come through the Cthulhu Society. And they were also told back in the 1850s and 60s that they were supposed to bring all of the nations together and back to Great Spirit. But, you know, starting in 1866, the Cthulhu Society basically hasn't gotten off the dime since the end of the Civil War. So John Red Hat Duke took it upon himself. He was a member of the Long Hair Clan, which was the spiritual core of the Cthulhu Society. He took it upon himself to get the society off the dime. And he died. And one of the things he did was he was the founder of the idea of Prophecy Keepers Radio, which we started that up about a month after he passed away. And he was the elder behind Prophecy Keepers and Wovoka.com also. And he was the guy that put the bug in Chad Smith's ear that ended up with Chad Smith putting out the press release that it's time for Cherokees to quit calling other Cherokees that don't have cars and wannabes. Because you have people like the head of the Cherokee Elder Society, Paul Thomas, and Paul will tell you if he was born 50 miles north of where he was, he wouldn't have a card either. And he fully accepts that 90% of the people that say that they're Cherokee are Cherokee. And what's the big deal anyway? Sorry, the big deal is made over citizenship, and then basically once the people lost the culture, which happened about 1880, then here recently, beginning basically in the 70s, the Cthulhu Band had their federal recognition in 1949, and then the Cherokee Nation got their recognition. But only as a Class 3. They weren't... The Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma is recognized as a Class 3 Indian organization rather than a Class 1 tribe. But they've exerted authority over
over more people, and you know, the more people you have, and you know, more money you have flowing. So basically, they kind of, and I understand, particularly in the Mankiller administration, they kind of strong-armed and want to dictate what everybody should think as to what the culture consisted of. And at one point, there was a joint resolution, I guess it was made about 1995, a joint resolution made by the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma and the Eastern Band, naming all of the unrecognized Cherokee groups that had signed a Cherokee Unity Statement in 1994. And excoriating the states of Alabama and Georgia for recognizing state-recognized tribes, which is really kind of ridiculous because the first, and some people nowadays don't like the idea of state-recognized tribes, but hey, you know, there's state-recognized tribes that predate the United States of America in Maine, in Virginia, possibly elsewhere.
There was five in Alabama, that's where I'm from.
That's the one in the tribes I belong to. And they're all a mess.
Well, it's just
let me throw some things at you. We are so dictated here by the administration of the tribes, and it's really interesting. But anyway, that's not the end of this. When we first came up here, we met a fellow named Bill Jackson, who was one of the first guys up there to have a master's degree, but he came from a very traditional family here in Snowbird. And Jill was the one who told us, he said, you're not going to find anybody that knows it all. You're going to find a little here and a little there, that kind of thing. And unfortunately, in the 15, 16 years we've been here, we've just seen so many of the old people die and go away. So even more are gone.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better, I feel a lot better, and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
See, what I tell people, because we all come from a Christian background, is that we've got to start listening to the prophecies and the teachings of the people of this land that we're from. They know, like Lee Brown doing that thing on the Hopi prophecy, he's Cherokee boy. I don't know if you've got a copy of that. I can make a copy and send it to you.
Have you got a copy of the video?
Oh, yeah.
Of the Lee Brown video?
Yeah, Lee Brown.
Oh, okay. Because somebody in a Native Prophecy, we got 300 people on the Native Prophecy Council Yahoo list, and they were trying to find a copy of Lee Brown's video to send, and we'd like to.
It's kind of rugged, but I got it.
Yeah, we're trying to get one. See, we've got, and one of the things I want to tell you is that the capability we have, and they say the way to sell videos online or audios is to offer people a good clip of it. And, you know, we can help you with, Ghost Wolf and I can help you with those with your videos, and we can put them up on our server space, you know, where you can click on your website to watch this video, and It'll be over on our service station because we've got the, you know, we're doing this for Out There TV, and we're archiving several different things for the Cthulhu Society, and we help you out with that too. And we just have to get a video card so we can convert and plug a VCR into our computer and copy that. Well, that's pretty quick though. But actually, one of my friends him getting the time to do it, but yeah, there's a lot of wonderful things we can do, and the Lee Brown videotape is one thing. But that Lee Brown is called Cherokee Prophecies. But anyway, what he's really talking about there is Canadian Aleuts bringing a Tibetan message. If you read in there, it's really kind of interesting. He's talking about the Canadian Aleuts were given a message from the Tibetans to carry. So it's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. But anyway, people can hear me talk at any time.
Well, it's like Joseph Campbell said, the old time religion is so good and so profound 50 years ago that it didn't work. There are certain basic things, such things like this day here, if you hear a cry, if you listen close enough, you can hear a cry in a second.
Yeah.
And they are very big on this. Mandy, did you tell them about the prophecy's name?
No, I haven't told
him
about that yet.
Yeah, her mom was a midwife, and she was a supplier. Her dad was running Wolf, and Molly was at the whole picture. Oh, let me say this real quick. Mom, don't let me forget that, but let me point this one out to you real quick. Mandy had two brothers, and I hope I'm not getting anybody from no close names on this one, okay? But anyhow, she had two brothers, one named Lloyd, who knew medicine, and he treated people only on the rest, okay? Their people. She had another brother named Harmony, and Harmony got so good, and he was always off the rest. He was tickling and positioning.
He was Roland Thunder's teacher, Harmony Sequoia.
Yeah. He was wrestling. He was in David Crockett movies. He was in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
A bunch of the Sequoias that were swimming for him. Well, anyway, there was a fellow named J.C. Garrett, who was the administrator of the hospital, mm-hmm. asked him around me real well.
J.C. and his son, J.C. and his father, wrote the book. Yeah.
Yeah, he wrote a book on it. But anyway, it was real interesting that Mandy very rarely talks about those two guys, okay? But they knew medicine, and he had a message here that Mayo Clinton tried to win world here.
Well, that Dominique had it. Had a cancer
cure. Yeah, I've had a cancer cure. So anyway, now, I'm still left to myself. Oh, I'm Molly.
So Molly, we find that is Dominic's mother, and a lot of that was part of his path of knowledge was really what Molly knew, and then
a medicine person in the family like Mandy cannot do medicine on her children. Only an uncle or somebody else could do medicine on her children.
Uh-huh.
But she could do medicine on anybody else's children. See what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Well, we really found that interesting. But anyway, Molly said she told Mandy, because it was 12 in the family, and said that the day would come that there would be black belts built through these mountains. These mountains never had
ribbons. They'd be black ribbons.
Black ribbons, I mean not belts, but ribbons.
Genetic.
They took those things through the mountain and put them on there, and since they've done that, we have windstorms, they dug up the rivers, made dams, all this kind of thing. Now that flooding we never had before.
She talked about the little bugs that would run on these ribbons, and the people would ride in and carry them places, and she would hope that she would to see those things that she could ride, and she remembered when she did see them.
And there was one.
She could see them up there, and she thought it was those little things that her mother or grandmother talked about, and wanted her daddy to go up there and catch one of them, and she could play with it. And cars up on the parkway.
And one of the things was she saw people flying on those ones.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the kind of things that have been passed down.
And they also talked about in their family about the they believe that the Okina that rolled around in Appalachia would roll over one day, and that means a big earthquake in these mountains.
The seismologists have concluded that that will occur.
North Carolina has the most tremors of any state in the country. You just don't feel them because they're a different kind of tremor than what you have out in California. But we do have a hot spring not far from Asheville, which is where the magma's closest to the earth in the mountains. And the earth does move slightly. You see buckling in the highways all the time going up there. And I would assume that if there is a big shaking at any time, it probably would have been in the valley somewhere around there. But there are known earthquakes. I just have an article from George Ellison, another local naturalist. She had put together a lot of these stories about the earthquakes in the mountains, and they were known to happen from time to time and change a spring head, and they turn into what's called a citified spring, where it would be 7 minutes between when the water would come out.
I asked one of the elders one time about Indian medicine. She said, Indians have medicine. Unless you have an Indian name and know how to call in the heart of a human spirit of that flame, it won't be any good.
Mm-hmm.
They said white people have illness.
So the Indians have their illnesses and their medicines for those illnesses, and the white man had medicine for his white man's illnesses.
Now, which is really, the Indian traditional name, which brings up another pet peeve. Who is the past chief up there at Eastern Man, a man?
Well, Mr. Wright, there was George Dugan, and then Michelle Hicks is the current one.
Who was before Joyce?
Leon
Jones put out a public statement against traditional names, literally slapping a Catoosa elder like John Red Hat Duke in the face because he has, you know, which shows you where, you know, where some people's minds are.
let me tell you one thing about what we have learned. Okay, we get hurt so, and these Indians will take you in a heartbeat. They'll take you anything they think you want to know.
Yeah.
And when they find out, they'll put you through every test in the world. When they find out you're real, they'll shoot you square and square, okay? But what we're about is to be as authentic as we possibly can. You know what I mean? There are so many people out there, like me. My dad was 3/4 Cherokee. He never said a word about it. But there are so many out there that this means so much to them. They don't want fufu, which is so called in Christianity. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They want real. They want authenticity. They want the real world. How do we grab that magic of the noble red man that existed so many years ago? It's hard working in that
area. Well, they've got an ideal area to live in. Well, they never did find old, what's his name that they accused of bombing the abortion
clinic. Let me tell you a story.
And hang on just a second, because let me make one comment. The sheriff of the westernmost county is Cherokee County, right?
Uh-huh.
Oh, the sheriff of Cherokee, of North Carolina.
It's in Macon County.
Graham and Bacon.
Oh, no, it was Graham County, I believe it was. He said, and I made a note of it at that time when they were looking for him, but he said, that guy can stay out in these mountains forever. He said, there's plenty to eat out there, you know, right off the trees and bushes. He can stay out there forever.
Right.
And caves. Mo Greggs couldn't find him.
Well, let me tell you a story. We lived in a place at that time, right above the res, where he probably hit out a lot. We used to take in homeless guys, Vietnam guys, and one guy we took in that lived with us on and off for 3 years was an instructor for the Army Rangers.
Uh-huh.
And he knew everything that Eric was going to do. We got a young man who was in the house about 2 weeks ago that was good friends with him. He did real well. So he's still hunting and tracking because he was in the service with us.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, we got a phone call one Saturday, right after he was arrested on that Friday, and for Ireland, for National Citizen Times, and they said, we want you to do an article on what he probably did to survive the 5 years in the woods. So she did it, and they put it in the paper the next day, that Sunday morning, in the actual Times. By 9 o'clock, we had a phone call from NBC that said, would you please go down to Navajo Gorge, where that's where the crystal was dropped from the Moon Heat Council House of the Moon Heat. That's another story.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, she went, we went down there, and they didn't know, but it was a place where he probably hung out a lot. And they filmed her, showing the kind of things he did knowingly. The next morning, we got a phone call from the Atlanta Constitution, said it was a syndicated article on what he probably did for medicines and foods to last for 5 years in the woods. Well, at the same time, we gave him Jim's number, that he'd take a call and get information on probably what he really did, because Jim trained this guy, not this guy, but guy Rusty.
Mm-hmm.
By Wednesday, we got a phone call from CNN saying, you come to Atlanta on the live interview, but bring some of those news with you to show what it is. For 30 minutes, she sat in CNN's studio, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Frederick of Whitfield, and he just permeated that place with the aroma from those beautiful plants. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I mean, it is. Next week, we got 700,000 hits on our computer. It was unreal. Everybody's wanting to go to the woods and live and get away from this crazy world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, one thing I made very certain that I didn't say, because I really live 50 miles from less than that, 30 miles from Andrews, and in that area, and I wasn't about to mention a lot of what I knew, which is she not only forages land, but she can forage all those homes up there in those woods, which he did, and admitted it later. He told one of the best sheriff deputies, he said, He said, that was great moose tracks ice cream in your outside refrigerator.
Yeah.
Everybody has a refrigerator freezer sitting out in their garage or carport.
Uh-huh.
And nobody locks that. How do you lock one? But he would go in and he did a little here and a little there, and even sent the night in one lady's car that was unlocked, and it was cold, and he sent the night in the car. If she knew the next day, she was sure that she'd close the door, and the door was just slightly ajar. And just all kinds of things.
Because he didn't want to plant.
And can't drown, these forests can't drown for what people leave behind.
But let me give you some other goodies. Mamie talks about when she was a little girl, running with her father would get her out of bed and Molly, and it was a foot race. This is very important. A foot race out of that house to go down straight for it to call in that water seven miles.
Mm-hmm.
And many times it even break the ice. That's how recent it was that they followed the old ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so since my health is bad, I can't do that anymore. But I get up, first thing I do is rinse my face 7 times, under the 7 directions, walk outside and face the east, and take that part of the where they live. That's the way they live.
Huh.
And it is still alive and well.
Sure. That's a great way to honor.
People, they, you talk about prejudice, it comes out up here. Now, it's better where we live because these people, they didn't have, well, New Orleans had 6,000 people in this town. And 600 of them are Cherokee, because nobody is. So they had to go to high school and all this kind of thing, and I mean, it's just, there's been so much in America over the years that this whole entire area is well versed in their ways.
It's just
different
from family to family. Sure. And they know, most of them know that their kids have got to make it in the white man's world, and so they really encourage them, you know, to get an education and keep going and learning business, and they have working with them if they have a business.
But I have to say, Will, that Michelle Dix, he's a young man. That's a strange name for him and chief. And Michelle's probably mid-30s, okay? He was hired by Billy Brown, who was a council member here, owned off 8 years ago. He was the guy that came up with the idea when they brought in gambling. And I mentioned this to Ned Long, who was an elder, that they got to take that money and they've got to set up, put in escrow the money for the kids who cannot get that money. So when a Cherokee child was born, from that time to the 19 years of age, they put it into an escrow fund, And by the time they turned 19, they got a good $60,000 to $70,000 for their education in Dubai now. So much has to take place now here on them that they get a home, you know, some Indian home. They got to put money down on it, they got to pay it once to pay them like everybody else. So they got to buy that now, they have to pay for their own insurance. But they just bought it to the Cherokee Hospital, and it is the state of the art. The problem is, they can't get any doctors or administrators to come and run the place. So those are the dynamics that's going on. It's all change. It is all changing now. But they're placing a huge emphasis. And Michelle is the one who designed most of this. And now, almost invariably, a chief here, an Eastern man, won't last. It's just the way it is.
Politics is just too nasty.
You know, you've got three geographical areas, you know, and within the main confines of Cherokee, you got Paintown, you got Wolftown, you got 3200 acres of rice, you got, what are we left?
Wolftown.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff, and I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed, it's convenient, stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable, it's convenient, it tastes really good. Taste the peaches, they're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated and freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm dying it right now, Marie
Osmond. Put it
under
your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
And most of them, there's still a few family names like like Slimmer or T-Test or something, we'll work out so that you, you know, okay.
Walking stick.
Obviously, yeah, walking stick, obviously, seriously. But there's many, like seriously things like, you know, Michelle Hicks and Gary Coleman and, you know, the last, well, what's your Indian name? Gary Coleman.
Well, hey, I'm sorry, but Hicks name, the chief of the Texas Cherokees is D.L. Pappy Hicks. Pappy, inside Special Forces Green Beret Society, he's the most famous Green Beret there ever was. He's the one that ran the secret war in Laos, Cambodia under Chief Van Pao. And he's been chief of the Texas Cherokees for a long time there, seeking federal recognition. And Chief Rogers, the chief of the federally recognized in Mexico, the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, has asked Chief Hicks to be his war chief. But Hicks, there used to be a Cherokee triumvirate before the 1827 Constitution of three chiefs. As I recall, it was Hicks, I'm getting old. But Hicks was one of them. And one of them was Hicks, Ridge, and somebody else. I can't remember.
Right.
While they're putting together. But
the guy who run this one past you, the guy that we rented from was William Jackson. They never killed Jackson's brother, okay?
Jackson's are Cherokee.
What now?
How are you going to say is Jackson's are Cherokee?
Oh, they hated it.
Including Andrew Jackson.
Andrew Jackson, but he said, oh, you know where he is. But they're a huge traditional family. Well, anyway, they still speak the language. We learned a lot from them. But anyway, I asked him one time, because here in Robinsonville, for 10 years, they won the state championship in high school football. And I asked William one day, I said, they had to play platoon to both of us. And I asked him one time, I said, why were you guys such a student athlete? He says, here was the only way we could go out and beat up a white boy's ass without being a
that
was so cool.
Of course, that's, you know.
At least for the fight, I don't mind telling you.
Yeah, that doesn't even have to be racial. Like, between high schools, they like to beat up each other, you know.
One of the things that they're resurrecting here, and it's just alive, and it's just taught me so much. The Zambia is still a big thing here behind the edge because they help each other.
Uh-huh.
And I'll never forget that they're bringing back the stickball game.
Oh!
And I was standing there one day, and they were going at it. This young boy came over, beautiful bright eyes, and he was smiling, and light up the sky. And he was bleeding. It's grass stains all in him, and he just had the playwright speed out of it. Because he, unfortunately, was the guy who was the ball list of his feet way out of it. And I mean, he just angered me. I said, you need to go out there with that ball first. He said, I can't do that. That's my throat. And I thought, huh?
Well, see, that game's part of the old Cherokee religion.
Yeah, I think it, but I saw it.
Yeah.
When they did the stomp here, I told Ira, they had 6-year-old kids to 80-year-old women as big as this door right here. And unfortunately, that the little woman sort of fell down. And all those little babies trying to help her get up, everybody just cracked up laughing.
Oh, yeah.
It was a joyous thing. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So.
They have one of the old-time get-togethers, if you will, trying to keep some of those traditional ways of doing things. It's like an old-timer's day for the Indians. A lot of the areas of the National Park do it as an old-timer's day, and the white settlers, descendants of the white families, will come and talk, you know, they'll make hominy and make soap and, you know, talk about old-time stuff. Well, the Indians do it, but only this one little bunch, this snowbird group called Fading Forces. And every May during Memorial Day weekend, for one Saturday afternoon, third Saturday in May, they go out to Coburn Creek, where by the Coburn Church over there, big field, and they invite the people who come, because it's, everybody's welcome to show up. Bring a turtle shell of dirt from home if you have one. If not, that's all right. And the first of the tribal members will do this seven times around the mound. They do a mound building ceremony to start off with. The only place I know that they do it. And they'll do that, then invite the other folks to come in and sing and go seven times around, you know. Then they start the day, and they do kickball, they do singing in Cherokee. They have food, traditional Cherokee food, and some of the people, some wild plants that are in there. There's somebody there with the table on medicines, a few things like yellow root and sassafras and a few other things. And there's crafts with pottery and basket making and what was it? It's, one fellow did coffins, didn't he?
Let me tell you this.
So there's a whole bunch of things that they do just for that one day, and they will talk to anybody that comes along. Most of the time, they're very quiet.
One thing they do here, and this moves me greatly, is that when somebody dies, they have a runner that will go through the community and knock on the door, no matter what time of day or night it is, to say, well, that's one. Tell who it was. And they have people who, without saying a word, go, group of guys will go and dig the grave. And another group of people will go over and start preparing the body. And another group will go over and start building the farm. And that is a huge part of this culture still. And like when Moses Rochacha died, he was just a loose of a man. And He took six strong guys, a whole lot of men's body, across a couple of streams, and up on that mountain where he chose to be buried, and it was white people. Mm. Not that much of that. And, I mean, it's still part of the culture. I mean, when they grieve for 3 days, they have to sit up, and I mean, it's singing, and it's just sick food.
Mm.
But it's the way they honor that soul. And I don't care if William Gaskell just fell out now. I apologize and said he did when he was 47 years old. But boy, they honored him for what he did in his life. It was a great thing before the boots got him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, man, they know how to take things and they turn it from a kid to a vow and make it sacred. That's what I like about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like I said before, we teach in Christianity like everybody else is. But boy, this probably told us more about understanding the sacredness of all things, especially people. We don't even regard people as sacred.
Mm-hmm.
When we moved in, somebody stole them. You know, let one man get angry and call cops and all that, but we understood this to look at somebody needed it more than I did.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that's the offense common attitude.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to get something going.
You got things to do for today. I'm sure.
As it does, we'll
talk again. We'll send you some things.
Sure, you betcha.
Let's see.
Does this help?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. This is
fantastic. Tell you what, Will. I mentioned to you, it's a beautiful book, and it's around here somewhere. I think I've got one left. It's The Sacred Sites here, okay, which is such an integral part. When I say here, I'm talking about in the North Georgia, all in this area right here. And it's the story of Spearfinger, where it was. It's the story of Thunder Boys. It is incredibly well done. It's mostly pictures.
And
you'll understand when you get it. And we've got another one. I think we've got one that we can only make a copy of. I see it right here. It's the stories of the little people. And what they did to give it, and I need to remind Mom right down there, since it's in him, the PDF thing from South Carolina home. Somebody came
up. Oh, okay.
He was really like that. It's very, very well done. Anyhow, they had these kids to go around all the elders and said, if you tell us your stories and experiences with the little people. And I'll send that to you.
Well, yeah, anything we can do unless we get the hardware here to make some previews of your videos, because I understand that's how you sell videos, and I know you'd like to sell some more videos.
Well, I mean, I've been 16 operations the last 5 years, and it's a constant battle.
Oh, yeah.
I know I'm jerky because I got bad news. Anyway.
You got that?
Anyway, I hope this is help.
Here's the address on the website that I can send this to.
I'll just send it to you. If you go and click on the, I'll just send it to you.
Okay. All
right. Honey, write down there. Fred Brady's cassette page, some of his stories. Excellent Christmas stories.
Did Fred, who recorded those?
He did. He and Bobby.
Oh, okay. Anybody hold a copyright on?
More or less.
Yeah, I didn't know if they're not copyrighted, you know, we could cop and put them up just for people for free listening. But, you know, we'll do what we can, you know, within the law. And,
yeah, we'd have to watch that copyright. That thing come back by soon as well.
We got permission from KJRH to put the video online as long as we didn't sell it and we don't sell it.
Hey, you got a copy of that video installed?
Well, yeah, we have a copy of the KJ. We have it, and it's online. And I could send you all of it. If you want it on DVD?
A DVD would be superb.
What KJRH did is they took their master and they made a VCR copy and sent it to me, and we made a VCR copy off of that, and I can send you a VCR or a DVD of that VCR.
Buddy, I would be holding to you. You send me that, and I'll send you all this stuff.
You betcha.
We're going to put together quite a bit of information for you, okay?
You betcha. And I think we may have, if your copy of Tom Brown's, not Tom Brown, but...
Lee Brown.
Yeah, we may have, like, a first generation of that coming sometime soon. As soon as that comes, we'll make sure you get a better copy of that, because probably...
Mine's in loading. I've got to get it done.
Third or fourth.
Put it on DVD.
Yeah, that's what we want to do.
Well, ours was probably several generations.
I didn't even know that it existed until a few weeks ago, and somebody on the Navy Prophecy Council said, yeah, well,
we've had it for 10 years. Huh? It is good. What he did, and from what I've been told, he lived around his students with the prophecy for everybody. He's really a Baha'i, okay?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
But, you know, I mean, he nailed it so good of what Grandfather David taught.
That's right.
And I believe it is very, very strong.
And who was it we saw on the front row when we looked at it again?
Trimbalo.
Oh, Trimbalo on the
front row. Yeah. He's controversial, but that's another.
You come across that name?
Yeah, he's a good friend of Ghost Wilson. He's fighting the IRS right now.
Oh, yes, he should.
And,
the world of the man's work, but boy, he is. Dan Williams is where he got a lot of his information to Dan, so the guy just not going to help us, so that's where that goes.
Yeah, well, it was a new age movement, everything just kind of was a fluid.
That's
the part.
You know?
We learned a lot from, but Wilson, looking back at Lee Graham's tape one time, he looked and said, holy cow, look, he's out on the front row, there's the symbol. He's there in the tape, listening to Lee Graham.
Now, where is your wife from?
She was born in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and her mom grew up in, she used to play on the Pea Ridge battlefield site in northeastern, northwestern Arkansas, which is the old Cherokee Reservation.
Right.
And Betty's mother's mother was an old granny woman, and the family carries tales about... I can't remember who it was that somebody had a wart, and they had an old witch woman that if you go to her door and give her some coins, she'd take your warts away. Of course, you know, she ended up with all the warts. But that
right, got a wart, yeah.
That's how she made her living, and but see, people understood all that magic, and yeah, I guess it was her mom that was her mom that had the wart, and her mother's mother took her to the witch and was taken away. And that's a virus. How do you move a virus around?
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. But they grew up, I guess when, Betty's grandmother, when her grandfather passed away, there was some money, and she got cheated out of the money by somebody in Fort Smith, and they lived in any shack they could find that, you know, that you couldn't throw anything bigger than a cat through the wall. They'd repair it, and then they'd go live off wildcrafting. That's how they did it. And the back then, you know, in the 30s and 40s, there were still little orchards around. You could still forage in Arkansas. But but my mother, the family story is in 1944, when my wife Betty was one, I guess somebody was sick in the family, and Betty's grandmother started whipping up some kind of herbal cure, and Betty's mother said, "Where'd you learn to do that?" And Betty's grandmother said, "From the Indians." And Betty's mom said, "What Indians?"